This is Cradle My Heart Radio with your host, Kim Cotola. Cradle My Heart Radio, preventing abortion and helping those it hurts.
This is where the healing begins. Oh, this is where the healing starts. When you come to where you're broken within, the light meets the dark. The light meets the dark.
And now, Kim Cotola and Cradle My Heart Radio.
Thank you so much for joining us again for Cradle My Heart Radio, where our mission, as you know, is preventing abortion and helping those it hurts. And thinking of that mission, it's a big mission. And as you're listening, maybe there's an abortion in your past, or maybe you're very passionate about saving innocent lives one woman at a time, as we've discussed in the past. I have someone as a guest this time out who is going to not only encourage you but equip you, because he has really addressed the issue of life, the pro-life movement, the problem of abortion from so many perspectives, and he really has a heart for helping others to understand it deeply as he does. Our guest is John Enzer, who we're welcoming back to the program. Reverend Enzer is the founder and president of Passion Life, his own ministry, but he is also a former pastor at the local church level and has been very active in the pregnancy help movement, founding centers in Boston and Miami, and consulting worldwide, really, with the movement. John, welcome back to Cradle My Heart Radio.
Thank you for having me.
You have been working overseas most recently, and I want to give you the opportunity to talk about that and help people understand that the problem of abortion isn't just an American problem. I know that, you know, in the past you inspired me when you said it's not just happening in Washington, D.C. The pregnancy help movement is needed in your neighborhood, but it's not just happening in the United States. So what are you learning about the problem worldwide?
Yeah, statistically, about 3% of all the abortions in the world are in the United States, about 3%. But probably 90% of all the pregnancy help resources and help are in the United States. So we have in our movement the same thing that the missions, the world missions movement faced, you know, a decade ago, where most of the missions were in places where they least needed to be. And so those who were leading the world missions movement talked about the unreached peoples and identifying the places of greatest need. And this kind of language and thinking I began to start thinking about in terms of the pregnancy help movement. Where are the places of greatest need with the least resources? And how can we start to reallocate this wonderful passion and the resources that we've developed over 40 years and start bringing them to the neediest places? And I came to two quick conclusions. Number one, our urban cities in America are desperately in want of pregnancy help outreach. Most of the abortion businesses in America have now been put out of business in the suburbs, but are very still strong and deeply rooted in our inner city urban neighborhoods, targeting particularly African American and Hispanic neighborhoods. Those are exactly the places where if you put a map of where all the pregnancy help resources were not. So we need to be an urban movement, okay? And secondly, we need to start thinking world missions. We need to think in terms of an international movement. And in my case, I started going to China. And China has 13 million abortions every year. We have about 1 million. They have lived for the last 35 years under the oppressive one-child policy, which means that if you can only have one child, you pretty much want to have a boy for all kinds of economic and cultural reasons, which means that girls are targeted for abortion. In fact, ultrasound, which is such a powerful tool for saving babies in most places in the world, because you see the humanity of the child, often in a place like China, is used to identify the fact that it's a girl, and then so that you can abort it. Because if you can only have one child, you want to have a boy. So we call it gendercide. And it's so terrible that even the Communist Party in China has outlawed the use of ultrasound to identify the gender of children. So,
and let's talk about that for just a minute, too, as to why they would do that, in the ways in which having not enough girls have skewed and impacted negatively Chinese culture. It seems like if it's, you know, beneficial to have a son, you'd want male-heavy society. What are the unintended consequences that China is dealing with as a result of that policy?
Well, there's a couple of them. The fact that families only have one child, you string that out over decades and decades, and you have a decreasing population. You cannot have a wealthy nation where there's a decreasing population. By definition, economies grow by selling more stuff. So I say to people in China, because they all think we got too many people, we need to have these policies, you know. I said, listen, if you sell apples, do you want fewer and fewer people living in your village or more and more people? I said, oh, I want more and more people. I sell more apples. Right. That's it. It's no more complicated than that. And if fewer and fewer people leave your village, you sell less apples. And then the less apples that you have, the less something you can buy of somebody else. So people leave the village to go elsewhere to find better jobs. And then your village starts going into a suicide spiral. Well, now just magnify that to the size of China. China is going to grow old before it grows rich. So this policy has allowed China to have a short-term burst of more money, more economic freedom because they have fewer children. Obviously, families that have eight children have more restrictions than families with one. But the long-term destruction is a suicide of the nation. One of them is the girls are all targeted. Now, there are 35 to 40 million young men aged 20 and younger for whom there will be no women available for marriage. Okay? Imagine that. 40 million young people, 20 and younger, who can't find a wife. Secondly, it turns women into a commodity. The rarer something is, the price goes up, right? So you turn girls into sex slaves and all kinds of commercialized ways that you can abuse women. You can even have a baby girl now, and easily sell it in China because the need for finding girls is so desperate that some families, for their son, will adopt a baby or buy a baby, never treat it in the sense that you would think of when you say we're going to adopt a baby girl. You're taking that girl into your heart, into your family, your home, and whatever. But in this case, they're really buying a wife for their son. That's really what they're doing. And it just changes the dynamic. So there's just all kinds of social evils that follow from abortion and this particular policy, so much so that China itself and the government is starting to weaken and change and have gone from a one-child to a two-child policy. And that's why I can talk a little bit more about our work today in China, because I think the government actually, they really recognize that they have a problem. And this is worldwide. In Russia, there are 15 million fewer Russians today than there were 20 years ago.
Well, and you and I had the opportunity to travel to Russia and do some equipping for those women who are understanding what a problem this is. And one of I will never forget one of the statements that we heard from one of the women in Russia is that abortion is now so common in Russia. They do a little mini aspiration procedure. The minute that you find out that you're pregnant, at 6 weeks, they'll say, the doctor will return to the exam room and say, yes, you are pregnant. Are we having a baby or an abortion? And then they'll do this little inpatient, procedure that costs $50, to the point that many of the women who were attending our conference had lost track of how many abortions they had had. I mean, the problem is just devastating. And, John, I want you to – so I know you have more to say about Russia, and I want to give you that chance. But I also want you to talk about the worldview here, because I know a lot of people listening – you know, have a really good heart about what ought to happen, from a macro point of view on politics and how best to steward the earth and everything else, you know, and they're really believing that population control is the answer. you know, saving the planet and these types of initiatives. And really, God's wisdom for us to be fruitful and multiply seems to have been something that we still need to take to heart. So those are two really divergent directions of where we could take the discussion. But I know you're ready with answers for both. So tell me your thoughts about Russia and what the situation is there.
Well, I was just going to add the fact that, you know, most people, especially from the impact of, like, the book that came out in the 60s on the population bomb, everybody is under the impression that the world has too many people. But the reality is, and governments like Russia know this, the real problem that we have is depopulation. Even in America, we have a depopulation. The only thing is that we have more immigration here, so our population continues in overall numbers to grow. But in Europe, yeah, all of Eastern Europe and Russia, Russia outlawed abortion after 12 weeks, and they pay people financially now to have more children. They're desperate because economies are built on growing populations by definition. So in terms of the big macro, whether it's China, whether it's Russia, whether you're just talking about Eastern Europe, the biblical formula of being fruitful and multiplying have always gone together. If you're not multiplying, you will not be fruitful. Now, you may have a short term, but every sin has a short term value to it. You know, it always has a benefit in the short term. It's the long term death that is sown. And so I think the change begins by particularly us as Christians declaring the value of human life and the blessing of human life to the world at large, Christian and non-Christian, and by assisting women and couples in with pregnancy, and slowly beginning to impact the culture so that children, families, marriage, all these things that are under constant attack from every angle have a chance to survive. And in China, for example, you know, everybody has experienced abortion. Everybody. I mean, everybody has experienced it. So either, I mean, even just think about what this means for marriage, okay? If you can only have one child and you've had your one child, what happens in the normal rhythms of a marriage if you're afraid that your wife is going to get pregnant and then be forcibly aborted? I mean, it's going to distort the relationship. Men are going to go out to prostitutes. And all, I mean, it just go the levels of death. Once you leave the biblical moral framework that God has set up, just are compounding.
So. A few years ago, John, there was a news photograph that circulated, but not many people saw it, of a woman in a cot with a late-term child that had been forcibly aborted. And you told a story in your address. We're recording this interview at the Heartbeat International Conference from the exhibit floor with John Enzer, our guest. He's from Passion Life, formerly in leadership with Heartbeat International, and just deeply connected to the pregnancy help movement and pours himself out for it in all of his work. And John, the story behind that picture is one that you shared with us about what forcible abortion is in China. And for those who don't know that story, it's completely appalling. You want to not believe it. You want to say that's propaganda, but you've seen it. Tell us what forcible abortion looks like in China.
Well, it's brutal, to be honest with you. It's very oppressive. The one-child policy in China didn't mean that you could have one child. It meant you could have one child when the government approved you for one child. So, for example, you are 21 years old, you're at Beijing University, you're doing what university college students do in Beijing these days, all of a sudden you're pregnant. You can't say, I want to have my baby because my one child. No, you're not married, and so you need a birth permit in China. It's called a hukou. It's kind of an identity card for your child, but you need this card to legally have that baby. So even though this policy has had ebbs and flows in terms of its enforcement, stricter and sometimes looser in others, and it's being loosened right now, terrible, terrible stories over the last 30 years in which people have been literally taken from their home, strapped down, aborted at 6-7 months along, and then as kind of a cruel punishment for violating the policy, they will return the baby back to you to take home for disposal. These are outrages, and the picture that you're referring to hit the internet a couple years ago. It's the first time that a forced abortion ever made it into the public social media in inside China, and it created such an outcry that it really shocked even the government. And so, again, I think there's reason for optimism for particularly pro-life work in China these days, because these policies, I do believe, are frowned upon. They don't want this kind of stuff to be exposed to the world, number one. And the practical reality is the economy in China is slowing down, and they know it will only get worse. They need more people. So they're not being moved by morality or the spirit of God, but they are being driven by the harsh realities of their economy. And it's a great opportunity for the church in China and for us then to serve the church in China to say, you know, let's turn the 70 million believers in China into the midwives of Egypt, people who fear God and let their babies live, you know. And if we can help the church do that, they will then impact their culture for the next 2 or 3 generations.
So I don't want to put you on the spot, because I know there are probably some things that you can't tell us about the work that you're actually doing in country. But describe for us the mission that you have in China. I mean, many of us are still kind of curious about the underground church. How free is worship? Is it difficult still to have a Bible in China? And if those things are true, then how are you possibly bringing God's word to the pregnancy problem in China?
That's a great question. And people who have kind of a vague sense of what's going on in China will be under the impression, we do talk about the underground church. It was very difficult to get a Bible throughout the 60s, 70s, 80s, up into the 90s. It's not difficult to get a Bible in China anymore. They publish millions of them in China. You can go to any approved church and you can buy a Bible. Now, there are some countryside places where it's still difficult to get a Bible, but it's more of a delivery issue, not a policy issue. The underground church, people who work in China now often refer to the church as the unregistered church, not the underground church, because the government doesn't really care that there's 30 people meeting in this apartment over here singing songs to the Lord Jesus. After 30, 40 years of trying to stop the church from growing, they recognize that the church can't be stopped, number one. It's a losing battle. And number two, the average house church is not out to overthrow the party, not out to overthrow the government. And so they're not a threat. And really, the government doesn't really care about anything unless it somehow threatens the power structure of China itself. So if a foreigner shows up at the unregistered church, that may raise a red flag, because that's a little different and not the norm. And who is that person, and what is he saying to them, and are they undermining our authority, that kind of thing. So foreign involvement with a house church can be a red flag. Or if the church decides to go on a march for life outside in a public area, that would be a problem, because that looks like a demonstration. And a group of 30 can become 300, which can be 3,000, which can be Tiananmen Square all over again, that happened in 1989 and came very close for toppling the government. And the only way the government survived was by bringing the tanks into Tiananmen Square. So anything that in any way connects to threatening the government is still very sensitive to. But they're not concern. They know there are, in Beijing alone, there's probably 20,000 small house churches all over the place. Okay, and they don't care. And we're organizing and teaching them a biblical view of human life, a scientific view of human life, Scott Klusendorf and company, you know, pro-life apologetics, a philosophical way to articulate the case in a secular culture like China, and beginning to organize the very first pregnancy help outreaches of the local churches. So they can't just rent a storefront like we can here, let's say, in Atlanta and start a center. Not quite yet that free. But churches can rescue and help women internally, because everyone, you know, even in their own house church, somebody's getting pregnant with a second child. Well, today, pretty much you can pay a fine for having a second child, or now you're free to have a second child. Well, let's say you have a third child, there's a fine that's involved. Well, the church can help pay the fine. There's all kinds of ways. Just pay the fine. It's just money, you know. And so there are all kinds of ways that we can begin to train the church and help the church in the context of China start to rescue mothers and babies.
You know, so as you're talking about teaching the Chinese a biblical worldview, teaching them a pro-life apologetic, teaching them to make the case for life, we need this here, of course, stateside too. And I want to give you the opportunity to talk about this applied bioethics work that you're going to be engaging in this summer at Oklahoma Wesleyan University. Regular listeners of the program know that I've been enrolled in the program, and it's been just an invaluable experience. So what can those who are interested expect in the course that you're going to be teaching this summer at Oklahoma Wesleyan?
Well, my course is really designed to be a theological course, to say, what does the Bible say, and to have somewhat of a systematic theology on the gospel of life, starting with the created mandate that we are made in the image of God. Obviously, you know, what does the Bible say about human life? You don't have to go very far to find Genesis chapter 1. What does the Bible say about the shedding of innocent blood, including abortion? How does this idea of shedding innocent blood is traced out throughout the Bible? How is this connected to the gospel? Why is it that we can say to people who are carrying the burden of their experience that they can come and be set free from all this? It's because the cross is about the shedding of innocent blood. So helping people understand all of these biblical connections, and then the biblical calls to rescue those from being taken away to be slaughtered, to be, you know, have their innocent blood shed, you know, child sacrifice and all the other types of. So we're just going to look at what the Bible says theologically, and then we're going to look at a lot of history. How has the church, or people like the midwives of Egypt way in the back, you know, from the beginning, how have people taken these biblical concepts and worked them out in the context of their times? So if you lived in Germany in the 1940s, the sanctity of life battle was a little different than it is today, right? Today it's abortion. If you lived in Africa, and where there were twin killings were common, you know, missionaries went and they had to start doing a rescue movement for the twins. Mary Slessor was famous for that. The context changes, but the principles don't. Mm-hmm. So we'll be looking at biblical theology and history.
You know, John, and I know this is designed to train up the pro-life workers in the pregnancy help movement to a level of professionalism that really has not been available in a comprehensive place up until now, you know, with Scott Klusendorf teaching the ethics of abortion, with Mark Newman teaching pro-life speaking, with you. You know, but as you're describing your curriculum, I'm thinking about pastors. I'm thinking about how, you know, the need to know this stretches across job descriptions, if you will, in the church. It really is material, I think, that could be beneficial to many, many beyond the pregnancy help movement.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I am a pastor. I come from a pastoral background, and when my involvement in the pregnancy help movement, I just kept trying to think biblically about how to take ancient, glorious, unchanging, orthodox truth and put the brick and mortar and the team together to rescue. So it's an outworking of my own biblical theology. And it's for pastors. It could be for anybody. I wrote a little book called Answering the Call, so I'll put a plug in for that. But a lot of the biblical theology and the history, we put in that little book. and Focus on the Family published the book, to now it's been picked up by Hendrickson and been as a second edition out. But anybody who can't come to Oklahoma and take that class, you know, can pick up that little book, Answering the Call.
Well, and I am remiss in my introduction of you to not mention your many books, including Innocent Blood, Answering the Call, and others. But we will certainly have a link to all of your materials at cradlemyheart.org. John Enzer of Passion Life, thank you so much for being with us. Now stay with us here at Faith Radio. We will take your calls. Phones are open at 1-800-811-3003. We'll also talk about some of the top stories on the life issue in the news this week here at Cradle My Heart Radio.
Safe place to connect with others, finding God's love after abortion. This is Cradle My Heart Radio.
This is where the healing begins. Oh, this is where the healing starts. When you come to where you're broken again, the light meets the dark. The light meets the dark.
Cradle My Heart with Kim Cotola. Join the conversation. Call toll-free 800-811-3003. 800-811-3003.
Thank you so much for being with us tonight here on Cradle My Heart Radio. As we presented our conversation with Pastor John Enzer of Passion Life, this week we got a press release from Women's Rights Without Frontiers. Reggie Littlejohn, the president of that organization, has sounded the call about a U.S. State Department report that was issued this week about forced abortion, sterilization, and other abuses commonly used to enforce China's population control policy through last year. And in addition, maybe you were shocked when you heard John Enzer say 13 million abortions annually in China. Now we see through this department, again from the U.S., through this report that is from the U.S. State Department, the number of abortions in China appears to be a staggering 10 million higher than the commonly quoted figure of 13 million per year. The country reports on human rights practices for 2015, released Tuesday of this week, said coercive methods in China generally have markedly increased in the last year. And listed among China's many human rights abuses is their coercive birth limitation policy that, despite lifting the one child per family restrictions, as we heard with John Enzer, in some cases resulted in forced abortion, even sometimes at advanced stages of pregnancy. You know, the Chinese government has repeatedly reported 13 million abortions a year, noting that according to official Chinese sources, the number of abortions performed is believed to be higher because the stats were collected only from registered medical institutions, didn't include that is abortions at unregistered clinics. But that higher number, according to the State Department report, says as follows. The National Health Population and Family Planning Commission reported that 13 million women annually terminated unplanned pregnancies. An official news media outlet also reported 10 million chemically induced abortions performed in non-government facilities. Government statistics on the percentage of all abortions that were non-elective was not available. And one of the things that is included in this report, if you go to the link on the news coverage, which we have on our Facebook page, facebook.com/cradlemyheart, is you will see that China is now no longer reproducing. They are in demographic winter. Their birth rate is, I think, 1.6. 18 Chinese provinces have laws requiring abortion for illegal pregnancies. That's a pregnancy in China without a birth permit. But as John Enzer said, what we're talking about here is providing money to pay a fine. If your heart is not breaking over this as mine is, I don't even know what we could say more. But Passion Life really deserves your support because they are working on the ground to help the women who are being affected by these policies. Heartbeat International is another organization that is bringing the pregnancy help movement to China. And, you know, I saw an article recently about someone who did an informal survey of millennials, just asking what the word associations were for pro-life, and it wasn't good. If you're a baby boomer like me, you know that that maybe has some controversy attached to it. You know that people are trying to change the definition of it. You know that, you know, the press has reverted to calling us the anti-abortion movement or anti-abortion activists, even if we just hold that opinion. But the pregnancy help movement shouldn't be controversial. It really should not be controversial. And there is pregnancy help that's happening in China, and that is our hope. It's happening all around the world, wherever life is threatened before birth. So you can read more about it at Cradle My Heart on our Facebook page again, but I really hope that you will. You know, according to the report, female infanticide, of course, is a huge problem still in China. Gender-biased abortions, the abandonment and neglect of baby girls, all remain problems due to the traditional preference for sons and the birth limitation policy. And coercion, forced abortion, involuntary sterilization continue unabated through 2015, and they will continue under the two-child policy because unmarried women and third children will be forcibly aborted. Coercion remains the core of the policy. And if anyone thinks that since they raised the limit to two children, trying to perhaps address the, you know, winter demographic winter issue, it still remains a huge problem in China. All right, here's our phone number, 1-800-811-3003. We do have a pro-life resource for you tonight, and that is John Enzer's book, written with Scott Klusendorf, Stand for Life, A Student's Guide for Making the Case and Saving Lives. And if you would like to get a copy, just call and join us on the air with your question or comment at 1-800-811-3003. This material about the case for life is so important because it takes the complications off the table. It takes all of the emotion out of the conversation. It should, if you're talking about science and if you're talking about philosophy and if you're talking about logic. We ought to be able to have these conversations on those bases without having any religious controversy to cloud the issue and to be able to make the case for life persuasively and winningly and in a way that helps others to see the truth. And so these materials are so helpful for this. And here's why this is so important. So if you'd like a copy, join us, 1-800-811-3003. And please, we do not have to give your name. I understand that there are sensitive issues being discussed. You can call anonymously or you can make up an alias for yourself, 1-800-811-3003. But just join our conversation here at Cradle My Heart Radio. Kim Katola is my name. There was a piece that ran in the Washington Post, and we've got this up on our Facebook page, too. This one also this week, April 11th. And it was about the activism that's happening in Washington as the Supreme Court is making their decision about what should be happening with the pregnancy help centers, with the abortion industry in Texas. And so women are in Washington trying to influence by telling their stories. And the Washington Post story has the headline, What Was Lost, What Was Gained? Women Share Abortion Stories with the Supreme Court. This by Teresa Vargas. And the lead says, Kate Banfield and Tammy Romo Alcala have never met. But more than 25 years ago, the two women found themselves in the same position, freshmen in college, pregnant and scared of derailing all they had worked toward. Both women, on a day each recalls vividly, walked into a Dallas abortion clinic. but it's what happened when they walked out and in the weeks and decades that followed that places them on opposite ends of the most significant abortion case to be heard by the Supreme Court in a quarter of a century. Banfield graduated from college and is now a mother of three, said she has no regrets. I knew I did what was right for myself, she said. Romo Alcala, who dropped out of school and had two children before undergoing a hysterectomy at age 28, said she should have had the baby. Women need to know your life doesn't go on being the same, she said. The landmark Supreme Court case that legalized abortion nationwide, Roe v. Wade, was built around an anonymous woman. No one knew that Jane Roe, who was really Norma McCorvey, now an abortion opponent, until after a decision was reached in 1973. And very few people know that, by the way, this is now me speaking, that Norma McCorvey never had an abortion. And she very much felt used by the feminist attorneys who urged her to lie and say that she was raped when she was not. Back to the story from the Washington Post. More than 40 years later, as the high court prepares to make a ruling in a case challenging Texas's stringent abortion regulations, the justices have heard from more than 200 women in front of the court briefs who have publicly disclosed their private abortion experiences along with their names. No way to know whether the justices will read their words as they weigh the issues in Whole Women's Health versus Hellerstedt. But scholars who study the Supreme Court say there's been a drastic rise in the number of front-of-the-court briefs filed to the High Court and that justices are increasingly citing them in their opinions. Well, what's interesting to me is that regardless of any individual experience, there is a life lost in every abortion. And that is what simplifies and clarifies the issue. Kate Banfield doesn't regret it. She did the right thing for herself. She carried on her college career. Tammy Romo Alcala sadly regrets it and believes that it ought not to be anything that's available to people. She believes that it is did irreparable harm to her life. And her opinion, of course, carries as much weight as Kate Banfield's. But in both cases, a human life was lost. In both cases, a human life was violated. This is what the Supreme Court ought to be basing the decision upon, not upon the life experiences and emotions of women who made a decision in a difficult moment. And I say this as a woman who made that decision myself. If you know my story, you know that I made the abortion decision as a pro-choice feminist at age 23 to protect my budding career. And in the short term, I would have told you that I did the best thing for myself because I felt I had no other choice. I didn't have family living in the area. It wasn't feasible to become a mother. No one suggested any sort of support for me or making an adoption plan, although I'm not sure I would have done that. Although that would have been the right thing to do. I'm not sure I would have had the moral courage. But that's the choice that I still have to live with. And here's what we need to understand. What was most difficult for me in the aftermath was coming to grips with the fact that I had had a hand in the taking of a human life. My heart knew it. My conscience convicted me of it. And it was true. And it remains true. Now, as a follower of Jesus Christ, I am forgiven. And when I stand before him at judgment, God's word tells me he won't remember that because I believe in Jesus Christ's perfect sacrifice to pay the full price for what I did. What an amazingly good piece of news for me and for you. And I will tell of his love until I no longer have breath. Because people need to know that we don't have to stand condemned for the sins and the mistakes of our past, no matter how heinous. But what I want you to understand as well is that I do live with the consequence. It echoes down through the years, and it's been many, many, many years, over 30 years ago, well over 30 years ago. And the reason for that is because it was another human life. 1-800-811-3003 is our number. If you'd like to receive tonight's pro-life resource, it is a copy of Stand for Life, a student's guide for making the case and saving lives. And if you're new to the program, you might not have heard me go through the case for life, but you can learn to do it in a minute or less. And here it is. The science of embryology teaches us that from conception forward, the embryo is a distinct, living, and whole human being. Life begins at conception. And philosophically, there is no difference between the embryo you once were and the adult you are today that would justify killing you then, but not killing you now. Differences in size, level of development, environment, and degree of dependency, as well as differences of the circumstances of conception, are not valid reasons for saying that you could be killed then, but not now. That's the case for life, from science, from philosophy, and from logic. Well, from logic, the case for life is this. It's wrong to intentionally kill an innocent human being. Abortion intentionally kills an innocent human being. Therefore, abortion is morally wrong. There's so much more to effectively and persuasively making the case, because we know that there are objections. We know that emotions do become involved. So if you want to be equipped and ready for those conversations, this is a great resource for you. Stand for Life, a student's guide for making the case and saving lives. John Enzer and Scott Klusendorf have written this just for you. And we have a copy for our first caller with a question or comment tonight. Call now, 1-800-811-3003 here at Cradle My Heart Radio.
A safe place to connect with others. Finding God's love after abortion. Cradle My Heart Radio with Kim Cattola. Call toll free at 800-811-3003. Seeking to help others find God's love after abortion. Cradle My Heart Radio with Kim Cattola. Call toll free at 800-811-3003.
Thanks for being with us tonight. We're glad that you're here. I'm Kim Cattola, your host. 1-800-811-3003 is our number. 1-800-811-3003. Our mission, you know, is preventing abortion and helping those it has hurt. And I think that making the case for life is it's a wonderful tool and skill that we've developed that I think is part of the action plan for healing and fully healing after abortion. And if you have experienced abortion and you've not been able to heal, I want to encourage you with something that I heard this week that I think really applies to our case. I didn't really write about this when I wrote Cradle My Heart, Finding God's Love After Abortion. That is a biblical resource that takes us through Jesus' ministry personality and the ways that he interacted with people who needed healing and who came to him and walked away forever changed. And we can appropriate the things that he said and the ways that he helped them in the Gospels to our problems that we face after we have made the abortion choice. We see so much about the way he interacted with the man who was crippled at the pool, lying there for 38 years, blaming, crippled by blame. We see Jesus with that diagnosis and then helping him to move on and to stop the blaming. We see how he helps someone to see herself properly because all her life she's never known who to worship, the woman at the well. We see Jesus healing the woman who had an issue of blood and how shame would have prevented her from even leaving her home to go and see him that day, but how he imputed his purity to her. And her shame was gone forever, so that she stood up and talked about what he had done with her, for her, in that same crowd. Oh, Jesus' love is just so amazing. And one of the things that he does is he absolutely changes us. But we also sometimes have to work through the human dynamics of our choices and what has occurred with us emotionally. And I really hope that if you have not yet yielded your heart and soul to Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior, that you would make that decision today. Because it's when our spirit is finally right with God over the sin that separates every single one of us, not a particular sin, even as serious as the sin of abortion, but the sin problem that we all have. If you've never dealt with that, I really hope and pray that you will today make that decision to accept what Christ has done for you, to remove the penalty for sin by his perfect sacrifice for us. 1-800-811-3003. We can talk about that if you want to call, if you have a question about it. I would love to help you understand that. It took me some time, and it took me being brave, facing up to what I thought was going to be the punishment, and instead I found God's amazing grace. It still makes my it still could bring a tear to my eye when I think of it, his amazing mercy and grace and love toward us. But the thing I wanted to share with you that's fairly new for me is that the way that change comes about is really in three things. First, we have to have an awareness of what needs to be changed. Then there needs to be some acceptance, and then we can take action. And as it was explained to me this week, for example, if I decide that I really hate the fact that I have naturally curly hair, and I'm aware that I want to do something about it. So I go ahead and maybe I don't know, shave my head, let's say, and then I'm really unhappy. Good thing it will grow, but what I probably did was I tried to skip over the acceptance part and jump right into an action. And when we do that, what happens? Well, when the hair grows back, I'm going to have to do something else. Maybe this time I'm going to get it chemically straightened, or maybe I'm going to dye it blue, or maybe I'm going to buy a huge collection of hats. But if I don't accept the fact that I have naturally curly hair and just accept it, I'm probably going to keep taking actions to try to change something that I may not even need to change if I can go ahead and accept it. What that means for us after abortion is we have to accept our part in it. We have to accept, you know, whatever it was, I put that relationship ahead of the life of an innocent child. We have to accept I put my career first. We have to accept I caved into fear, thinking that I'd never be able to finish my education. I didn't stand up for myself. I knew it was wrong, but I listened to my parents. Whatever your part in it was, we have to accept and own that and own the responsibility just for our part in it. And I know there are maybe some listening who have been through an abortion experience, and you are not responsible. The decision was taken out of your hands and you were coerced. And that is something that Jesus can heal as well. But if that's your story, this doesn't necessarily apply to you. I'm talking about, you know, when we're trying to change and get to that place of really living in a different way after abortion, not just saying, well, I don't regret it because it was the best that I could do, or I don't regret it because it protected my career, and I don't regret it because I could become a good mother later on down the line. No. What we need to do is we need to accept if there was any wrongdoing at the center of it. We need to accept it before we try to take any action. And one of the beautiful things about being able to take action after acceptance is to say, you know, I can stand for life now. I can speak truth to others. I can listen with compassion for other people who are having a difficult time accepting their part in it or accepting the fact that their choice was taken from them. What I'm trying to impart to you is the truth that after abortion, you do not have to carry the burden of the sorrow of it, of the pain of it, of the sin of it, of any difficulty that it brought into your life. You don't have to carry that. Not only can you be forgiven in full, but as God's word says, He returns the years the locust ate. That means different things to every one of us, but he makes other promises that are so precious to us after abortion, after we've done something irrevocable like that. In Ecclesiastes, he tells us he makes everything beautiful in his time. And I know that one of the ways that he has made my sin of abortion beautiful is just to make me free to be able to speak the truth to others. I hope that you've heard it, and I hope that you can receive it, and I hope that you will reach out for your freedom, already won for you by Jesus Christ, so that you can then take action in a way that really, really is life-changing. Learn more about our mission to prevent abortion and help those it hurts at our website at cradlemyheart.org, and join us again next week. I'm Kim Cotola. Remember, Jesus loves you, and so do we.